Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we continue our 2017-18 season preview for you guys. I'm glad that y'all are kind of coming back along with it as we've gotten through a couple of installments, and we're gonna be keeping it up. And let me bring in my co-host, Mr. Adam Murray. How you doing, Adam?
Yes, thanks for finding us in between beer reviews and comic book reviews. We fit in all.
Is that a knock on Barstool?
We fit in so snugly with the rest of our mishmashed rejects.
You can't be talking about the feed.
No. Just
Barstool Sports is what we're hating. Do you listen to any of the Barstool Sports? I guess the way to compare it would be like the W fan of sports podcasts. Is that fair to say?
No, just I don't listen to any of their stuff and. Yeah. I try to keep away from sports, really, in general.
Well, it's hard to keep away from sports, especially when the political realm sort of kind of like jumps into the fray, like the way it has been the last couple of weeks. We'll stay away from that if you don't mind. But we're going to be continuing our NBA preview. I mean, we've gone through some of the kind of the I don't want to call it the rudder. But, you know, the last two, you know, we had the upside down and the sunken place. Not the most attractive, but I mean, do you feel like a little bit more excitement coming in, or do you feel like this one's a little more blasé than the others?
It's good to be able to talk about teams that won't just be relegated, or we have discussions. Could Kentucky conceivably beat these teams? No, but it's just like, you know, football. Hey, could Alabama beat the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Jets? No, but we, you know, it's good to see, like, we have actual talent and teams that are trying. They might not be the best. They might not have the best plan, but at least they have some sort of vision.
Yeah, or they have the potential to be good. Like, if we're going to talk about the Vegas win number over-unders for all these teams as we've been previewing them. And when you look at these teams, I mean, you're looking at numbers kind of in the range of like the high 30s. A couple of them go over 40. So, I mean, if you, conceivably, you're looking at teams that will probably like just backdoor their way into the playoffs. So you're talking about teams that I guess are relevant, you know, or they could become relevant depending on getting a lot of really lucky breaks and maybe getting a good deal in the midseason through a trade or whatnot. But are you ready to get rolling?
Let's do it.
Okay, the name of this one is going to be called Just Keep Swimming. Do you know where that cliche comes from?
Jaws.
Since you have two kids, I have to imagine you know. It's from Finding Nemo. Now
I have one and a half, and one is 3 months old, so I don't think she's really much of a movie buff
one and
yet.
A half? Oh, God. So you have half of a kid.
More of management.
Oh, he's going to be so proud when he listens to this. But just keep swimming, because it's like the same thing as Dory. It's like you're fighting. It doesn't feel like these teams. I mean, we're going to talk about the five teams here soon, but one of them feels like they're finally back into the fray of being relevant. But the other four, for sure, doesn't feel like they're always just kind of scrapping for that extra penny on the street.
These are just – they have different reasons. Some were teams that were so bad a few years ago, and they're finally – on the upswing. Some are just treading water, and others are just sinking fast. So, yeah, you could say just keep swimming, but they're on different, you know. Okay, some is the Finding Nemo. Okay, just keep swimming. Some is like the Poseidon Adventure, where that, you know, towards the end she has to swim under the trestle, and then she dies at the end. Like, this is where.
And then there's 47 meters down, which is like where the nets are, where the bulls are. That kind of bad.
Yeah, so
I mean,
we're
now
all
we're
swimming, but
stuff.
We're all swimming for different reasons.
Yeah, we're all swimming in cliches, so we need to like bust out of this. Okay, let's start with the Charlotte Hornets. Now, this was probably our most contentious team last year. I was pretty high on them. I had them in the high 40s in terms of wins going in last year. You were super duper low, but it seems like the script has been flipped. Give me the reason why.
It felt good to be right on something for once, so
Yeah, but you're figured... not as pessimistic as you were last year about the Hornets. Well, let's just kind of talk about the Hornets last year. You know, they had some high expectations after going seven games with the Heat in the first round in 2016, but a little too Kemba Walker dependent for sure. Even though Walker had a fine year, he was an all-star. Nick Batum, after signing a big contract, took a step back. Frank Kaminsky didn't really step up to the fray. Cody Zeller got his extension. He's important for them efficiency wise. So what it was is that when Zeller went out due to injury, they just took a crater in the front court. They wound up winning 36 games. Now, did you expect 36 wins, or did you think that may have been like their worst case scenario?
No, that's what people are like, oh, this team is good, they're on the up. Like, no, we've seen Marvin Williams. He's kind of on the decline. He hasn't done anything. You added Marco Bellinelli and Ramon's.
They had added Ramon Sessions. You're right. And then he went out the year not too long after.
And they weren't any good. And it's just like, well, Batum, like, yeah, Batum's going to give you what he gives you. Kemba Walker's going to give you. Kid Gilchrist has zero offensive game, and it's just he's going to be that type of player.
The Roy Hibbert experiment failed, so they trade for Miles Plumlee, who immediately got hurt.
And then you have, well, we got Kaminsky. We gave up four. We didn't want four first rounders, but we wanted Kaminsky, and well, you got him, and good luck with that. And just, yeah, the team had sort of peaked where they are. And now, okay, do they make sort of a panic move? It's sort of a, I don't think it's panic basketball-wise, but I want to say it's more of a desperation as we need to keep the city interested again because we've already lost this team once.
I mean, is there a sense of stasis with Steve Clifford's team where it feels like a little more of the same now? They went through a lot of changes via departure in the offseason 2016. I think Jeremy Lin signed elsewhere. I know I'm missing a couple of other names that were important to their nucleus when they went to the playoffs, but I know that they had a couple of other guys that were gone. I want to say, I wish I could remember all the players, reading them off.
Because it left no backup for Walker. And then
that's
you could
true.
Say Cody Zeller, they traded Vonleh away for Batum, and people are really kind of hard on Batum, but he's not going to be the superstar, but he gives nice numbers. He's a good complimentary piece. It's just we said last year the problem is they have no depth, and then they went to go sign, was it Deron Lamb?
Yeah.
Against, you know, no bidding. Oh, let's give you $7 million. Oh, well, you're not really.
Oh, you're talking about Jeremy Lamb. Jeremy, who's just always had an embattled relationship with Clifford when it comes to playing time, where he'll have like we've talked about this, where he'll have like a 10-game stretch where he'll average about maybe 11 points and 3 rebounds, and he's averaging like well over 35 minutes or 30 minutes, and then he'll DNP for like 10 straight games again.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And so what does this team need? Okay, well, you need backup guards, and you need a real defensive presence because Marvin Williams isn't going to do it for you, and Zeller, which I don't know why people are so high on him. Like, when they talk about him, it's like, well, he's the glue to this team, and he's like an all-star the way they...
It might be because he averages a steal and a block per game, so people feel like he has that sort of a... what's the word I'm looking for? Like, he's got like a multitude of skills.
Yeah, and it's just like the way they talk him up all of a sudden, it's like, no, he's decent and he's developing, but he's taking a little longer to develop than he should be 5 years into it. But adding Dwight Howard, yeah, he's not going to finish games, but he's going to give you a solid 28 minutes a game now. Even Atlanta, yeah, his numbers were down, but as we saw, the dumpster fire that was Atlanta, I don't want to say was actually his fault. It was just the team falling apart left and right and the ownership. Well, do we want to tank? Do we not want to tank? Do we want to buy? Do we want to sell? And as you see, it's just all the seams just came undone because of the bandwagon 3 years ago that everybody hopped on.
The problem with Dwight is the – I don't want to call it mythical because I do think it's real because every team he's been to is kind of – had a real stink he's left behind is the Dwight mare, where every team he goes to, it just seems like things just sort of fall apart internally, always unhappy, not a great teammate. Also, do you think Dwight is finally at the stage of his career where he can accept not being a centerpiece, no pun intended, centerpiece type of center, where you have to run things through him, you have to run offense through
him? No, because Atlanta would have been the sign. And then in the playoffs and, you know, all the talk throughout the year, this was supposed to be the homecoming. Okay, everything was gone. Houston, L.A. And, you know, obviously, as we've seen in Kobe Bryant, some people are just not going to get it ever. They will go down swinging, like, nope, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Dude, you can't walk. Nope, I'm the man.
Yeah. And I mean, for Dwight, you think that we're kind of finally there where he can accept that, or do you think the ego will just get in the way
again? His ego's still there, but I think he can – I think he knows he can't play 45 minutes anymore and play 78 games or 75, you know, with you know, sporadic rest. But
I mean, he can still block shots and rebound. I mean, that's never still gone away.
It's just, I think he knows he has to lower his minutes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, some other people, LeBron, oh no, I can play 45. We're good.
Yeah. Well, LeBron's the best player in the NBA. That's okay. Now we can have a better conversation about this in 2020 when team players might be kind of usurping him. You know, that's an entirely different topic. The reason why they had to do this via a trade, which was actually no matter what Dwight does, either negatively or positively for the Charlotte Hornets, it's already a win because of the fact that all they had to do was unload Miles Plumlee and a throwaway draft pick. Miles Plumlee was one of the worst contracts in the league. He's already at the end of his rope physically, can't stay healthy, and he's like, I think he's due to be paid, I think, what, $12 million, $11
million? $10 or $11 million for the next 3 years. And
a horrible deal. So when they unloaded it, it was actually sort of a win.
It was amazing Milwaukee was able to unload that, and then it was amazing that Atlanta was like, no, we'll take that, mm-hmm. and we'll just move up 15 spots. We want to get rid of Dwight Howard that much. We will take a bad contract in order to get rid of him.
So in order to do that, they had to do it through a trade because they were completely capped out with, you know, re-signing Batum, re-signing Kemba Walker, whose contract is actually a very reasonable contract. Marvin Williams with the money he makes, and Cody Zeller with his extension, and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who you and I have always been critical of. Is this a sink or swim year for Michael Kidd-Gilchrist?
Yes, it is. It is. This is his final year. If you're just going to be a defensive stopper, well then, okay, Batum, decent, but he's not an offensive wizard. You have Kemba Walker, and who's limited in his with his size and all. And if you're just going to be a black hole, you have Malik Monk, who will be more than happy to shoot it.
That's their first round draft pick, or I guess lottery draft pick out of Kentucky. Finally got a shooter. They needed one in the worst way. Now they averaged they were 10th in the league in 3-pointers made, so they were getting there, but they definitely took a dip from where they were the year before. So Monk is going to definitely improve that. Do you think Monk? Now we didn't see any of Monk because he had an injury going into summer league, so they shut him down. But I mean, do you think he'll be an immediate contributor?
Yes, because the second unit has no. Nobody who's good.
The bench unit is not very good. Like if we're going through the main rotation, it's Walker's the point guard. The two guard is Kidd-Gilchrist. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Batum is the three. Marvin Williams is the four. Zeller is the five. That leaves Frank Kaminsky as your backup center or stretch four, or stretch five, if you will. Well, you know what? I'm cheating. Dwight Howard is back in the mix. So do you think that's a good question? Do you think they can make that work with Zeller more of like a angly type of four, a long arm four, and then Dwight at the five? Or do you think they'll be managing the minutes where Cody plays and then Dwight plays?
I think they're going to be managing minutes. Dwight starts, but Cody finishes off.
Okay, so Cody will be like a super size six man.
Yeah, he'll be the six man, and just, you know, look at the, you know, Jeremy Lamb and. They signed Quinn Cook.
Yeah, they got Travion Graham again.
Yeah, it's just their bench. You know, the thing I like about Charlotte is I had said last year, they have no money to literally do any moves this year. And the fact that they were able to upgrade their team because you get rid of Plumlee and you get Dwight Howard, that is an upgrade.
And
the fact
getting
that you're
rid of Marco Bellinelli was nothing. That was nothing. It wasn't. I mean, he averaged 10 points a game, and
but that's nothing that can't be replicated. You can find somebody in the G League who can provide just as many, you know, 10 points if you give them the minutes.
Okay, Michael Carter Williams. I mean, he was the rookie of the year, but now it feels like he's damaged goods at this point. What can he do as a backup for Kemba Walker? Now, he's got the size and he's got the ranginess that Walker doesn't, so I guess he can be sort of a a decent alternative when Walker takes a rest, so that teams have to do different game plans. But he was – MCW was so bad for the Bulls when Rondo went down in the playoffs. Can he provide anything is really the question I'm asking.
Not really, and that's the thing is, well, he was Rookie of the Year, which, remember, I had said way back when, it's like, well, he's only Rookie of the Year because there's no coaching for them. And so I said, we don't care if you shoot 50 shots. We don't care if you have bad shot selection. We don't care if you ruin yourself the way the Celtics did with Antoine. You could develop all the bad habits you want. We have no plan. We're here to lose. Mm-hmm. So then you go to a team, well, we need structure. We need shoot. Well, I can't shoot. I can't really do much. I'm not super fast or super defensive. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, you know, you got your backup role, and all you need to do is just give us 20 solid minutes. That's it.
And I think that's pretty much where he's going to be slotted. I mean, he might wind up being – I mean, I don't think Briante Weber's back in the fold. I think he wound up departing in the salary cap crunch of it all. So they don't really have much at point guard after that. I mean, it's basically – you're just basically fishing for deals if you need somebody. They do have Dwayne Bacon, but I don't think Dwayne Bacon's a point guard. He's more of a two, like an athletic two. So still very thin, you know, once that you get past the first unit, I agree with you.
Who's the backup to Marvin Williams?
That it happens.
He's a stretch five. He cannot play the four. There's no true four that can solidly back him up, and that's
why letting go Christian Wood was interesting. And I'm not saying Christian Wood was a big time player, but he's 21 and they had a team option for $1.5 million. I know you want to stay right under the cap, but or right at the cap, but they could have used him. I'm just
unfortunately
saying.
That's the way business is. You have $1.5 million cap sitting on you. Well, let's get a rookie in whose cap is only $8.95.
Yeah, and they like oh my Toby, and
every penny matters. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, they improved, and they improved by the fact other teams are doing way worse now.
Their over under is 42.5 wins. That is a set. Let me look at the numbers here. 8.5 win jump from what they actually did last year. I go slightly under. I think we've talked about how the East has kind of saturated at the bottom to the point where teams that are even like passably good might be able to kind of inflate their win numbers. But I don't feel like 43 wins is in the books. I would say something like 41.
See, and that's sort of the argument is, okay, you're at 42.5. Well, 43 seems way too much. 41 seems way too low. I don't want to say I copped out by saying it's a push, but it seems about where they should be, considering Atlanta and the Bulls should be 8 easy wins now. Mm-hmm. Whereas they were straight losses last year. So that alone, or let's say 6 wins, that's a big difference, and that's a swing. I'm like, well, that should swing it about right, and Dwight does, you know, insert advanced analytics warp
batters left on base. Yeah, you're right, my morning math's awful. I said 8, and it's actually 6.5 when it's supposed to be a 6.5 win improvement if they do that. But that's still a pretty good jump for a team that literally made 2 rookies and a center addition, and that was it. So,
and they were, again, they had no money to do anything, so I think that's decent. So next up is
the Detroit Pistons. Now,
you like
this team won 37 wins. This team had 37 wins last year. A lot of people looked at that as a disappointment, kind of in the same vein as Charlotte, where they expected a little bit more because they made the last seed in the playoffs in 2016. Things seemed to be looking up. They paid Andre Drummond the big max deal as their star center, expecting him to kind of shine and show offensive improvement. It didn't happen. Now, he's still got a lot of good steal numbers. He's got great rebounding numbers. He just racks up double doubles like it's candy. But the problem is that Reggie Jackson was out for a while. Without Reggie Jackson, they had to go to their new signing, which was Ish Smith, as their point guard. When Reggie came back, he was incredibly inefficient. Tobias Harris wound up being their leading scorer, which is really the first telltale that they did not have a great year.
And the problem is this team was just completely jinxed, like you said, with the injury. And really, everything just came up tails for them. Everything they tried to do failed. And, you know, unfortunately, the comments I have for them is just this team just did not care last year. And are they, you know, at this point, does anybody buy into the Stan Van game anymore? The GM slash coach
It feels
position?
Like the new... it feels like the new ownership might not be, because there was definitely a little stretch there where the owner was thinking about just completely letting Stan go, but he gave him the vote of confidence, the dreaded vote of confidence for this season, which is basically saying you better win this year, and this is why I kind of like him this year. You got to win this year, Stan, or you're gone.
Yeah, and then, okay, you Avery Bradley trade you love, but then they come back with, here's a lot of money for Langston Galloway.
Well, that came first, and I think what happened is they put themselves into a corner, because the thing that was hovering over them in free agency was the restricted free agency of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who a lot of people were saying, well, if he gets an offer sheet that's somewhere in the 20 million, then Detroit has to match it, because they have a nice – he's a good part of their young nucleus, and you can't let that go. Well, the moment the Boston Celtics – because we just talked about the salary cap crunch that where you had to let contracts go for the sake of fitting new guys in. And that's exactly what happened with Boston, where it wasn't like Avery Bradley was bad for Boston. It was just that Boston literally had no room for his contract, so they had to get rid of him. So they called Detroit and said, hey, we'll give you Avery Bradley for Marcus Morris. And Stan was like, go ahead. We'll do it, you know?
Yeah, that was one of the trades for both sides seemed they fleece the other side. And it's just, well, we were going to get rid of him anyways, and we have no room for him, and he's the odd man out, so...
Yeah, and then Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, they let go his... they renounced his restricted free agency rights, which gave him the chance to sign with the Lakers, who we already discussed. But the thing is, with Detroit... Bradley, I really like Avery Bradley. I mean, I don't want to say he's the kind of player that can be, like... your stalwart, but he can be like, I kind of compare him to what Nick Batum did for Charlotte in his contract year in 2016. I feel like he can be that much of a difference maker for them.
Yeah, but at the same time, Caldwell-Pope, he was able to shoot the three. Avery Bradley.
He was one of the top teams in three-pointers made. His percentage wasn't very good.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, he'll shoot it, period. And you're really giving up a lot on defense now with Morris. So you're relying on, an under the lures and...
Yeah, the Boban. Well, I don't think Boban can play alongside Drummond. That's not going to work. Boban relieves Drummond when Drummond sits or can't play. They need to get something out of Henry Ellenson. They definitely need some better play out of Stanley Johnson, who was their first round pick in 2015. But he hasn't really. I mean, he's interesting, but he actually took a step back his second year, which is never a good sign.
He took a step back, and you're gonna have to. Tobias might have to play some four, if not a lot of four. And
you think we'll see a lot of Luke Kennard, their lottery pick,
who will now play exclusively behind Avery Bradley, who will play 40 minutes.
Yeah, but Avery can play the point guard too, which can turn Reggie into an off like a two, which is really what Reggie is. So I guess it kind of works both ways, with the combo guard mix between Bradley and Jackson. That's why I kind of like what they can do. I hear birds chirping, which means that Adam Murray has run out of things to say about the Detroit Pistons.
It's Detroit, and the problem, like I said, is just they're just a completely meh team. And
all right, well, let's first of all, give me your best memory of the Palace of Auburn Hills. They kissed it goodbye last year.
Oh, it'd have to be the Malice in the Palace, right?
Oh, come on, that's not nice. But it's true.
That those championship teams with the Chauncey Billups and
where's the new arena? Is it actually in? I'm gonna have to get Jordan Duncan on this. Is the new arena actually in Detroit?
I think it's in a downtown, like across from Ford Field.
Yeah, where is Auburn Hills? Is it like 20 miles away? Is it
kind of
like
it's in like the suburbs? Yeah.
Yeah, I never understood. But well, at least listen, the Lions and the Pistons. It only took about a generation, but you finally caught up to us. You know, it finally caught up. Maybe two generations, because the Palace opened in like 1988. I mean, it's been around for a long, long, long time. Ford Field only opened up 2000. I mean, I only say only like 2002 that it opened up. Like that was such a long time ago. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not. You know, it's not exactly. It hasn't been around forever. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have that old car smell yet.
Well, now you're in Little Caesars Arena?
Yeah.
They should have called it the Palace.
We haven't talked about ads for the jerseys yet. I mean, I'm not that interested. We can always have a nice conversation about this when we actually start watching the games, and it just becomes incredibly distracting. I don't want to try to get into it too much, but there's a few interesting ones. I wonder if it's going to be Little Caesars or the Pistons.
I don't know what the Pistons is.
They might. I mean, did every team agree to one, or are there still some teams that are negotiating?
I don't know if every team's going to have them. I would assume they would have already signed them.
Okay. Just rapid fire for the Pistons before we get out of here. John Luer, he got overpaid. Everyone knows this. Can he be a dependable backup?
Not really.
Boban had a 19-rebound game, which shows that he can be a prolific rebounder if you put him in a prime position. Can he actually become a starting center? Not necessarily in Detroit, but elsewhere.
In small minutes.
And then the last one I have is, will we get anything out of Reggie Bullock? I think he's actually in legal trouble right now.
Then probably not. It just, again, everything comes down to Reggie Jackson and he came back. He didn't come back last year. If he's able to come back,
it felt like he never came back. it was like he was gone and then he came back, but it was just the body, but the spirit was gone kind of thing. Like 14 and a half points and 2 rebounds and 5 assists for Reggie Jackson is putrid. I mean, compared to what he did the previous year. So, I like him though. I mean, we're kind of like talking with like a lot of mehs and a lot of uhs, but I actually kind of a little bit, I feel bullish about the Pistons. They're over under on Vegas is 38.5 wins. Are you going under here?
I'm going to go over on them because partly because of your enthusiasm for the team, but this.
Oh, I got you in the fold. Okay.
They have to be, this is the year for them to buy in, because if Bradley leaves and the team falls apart, they really don't have many.
It's a tank job.
Pieces. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're trading Drummond, which is a rumor we had heard before, you know, but I think that would be a real possibility that if the bottom falls out, I'll go over too. Obviously I'm going to be somewhere kind of like, I would say like 44 wins or so would not be out of the realm of possibility, you know, but, let's go ahead and move on to, here's the funny part. Like, we always talked about how the most meh team in the NBA, and a lot of people feel that way, is the Memphis Grizzlies. But I feel like there's, with the new winds of change that are blowing into Memphis, that there is some things to talk about here.
Good luck.
Oh, come on. You're going to leave me hanging two teams in a row like that?
Okay, fine. Memphis, the problem is they had no backup plan for their ground and pound, and everybody got too old. And now they've basically gotten reclamation lottery tickets.
Not only that, they're forced to fish for deals because of the deal that they made with Chandler Parsons and the fact that they are eating up a lot of their other cap with Mike Conley's supermax contract and then Marc Gasol's max contract. Did you hear the story, this interview that Marc Gasol gave during Eurobasket about how he might have to look into his options the following year? Not the most telling, not the thing I want to hear from my star center.
Well, he does have a player option, I think, after next year. But
yeah,
at the same time, if you're 32, do you want to be there on a non-championship team? Or, you know, when you're 32, you've been in the league for, you know, 10, 12 years.
It's fair to say they're a non-championship team, but they are a competitive team. And
but
they
they're
always
not. But at that point, do you start looking the David West route of maybe I need to go start chasing a ring and I'll be content playing 15 minutes for a contender as opposed to...
So you think that the interviewer just caught Gasol in like a moment of reflection with Jack Handy?
Yeah, kind of. Like, it comes down to like, look, you're getting older. What do you? This team is going to be rebuilding. There is no way...
Well,
about it.
Well, Zach Randolph's gone. He signed with the Kings. Tony Allen, which was a long process where I think the thing about Tony Allen that was important to bring up is that JaMychal Green's restricted free agency is still hovering in the air where there's offer sheets on the table, but he hasn't signed any of them for Memphis to match. So they don't know what that number is that they have to, you know, they have to pay.
Well, there are no offer sheets anymore. That might have been posturing, or it might have been something
else. It might have been the agent just trying to, like, get a better deal for his client. But a lot of the rumor is that they didn't know how much money they had to leave on the table for JaMychal Green, and they didn't have a lot of cash you know, to they didn't have a lot of remaining cap space anyway, if any at all, because they were hard capped thanks to Chandler Parsons. But the thing is that Tony Allen, the rumor was that they were going to leave at least enough for Tony Allen, but then Tony Allen signed with the New Orleans Pelicans. So
They wanted to leave enough for him, but that wasn't enough.
Which if I'm Tony Allen, I'm fine with. I mean, I agree with him. Like, I'm not going to sit here and wait for a deal where I might actually get less than I thought I was promised. Like, I want to get the money I know I can get. So if I can go to New Orleans and get, you know, maybe like $2 million, I'll do that. I'm not going to sit here and just take. Oh, can we give you $1.5 million? You know, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, okay, look, I know I'm not going to get 10, but you can carve out 5 for me, right? Oh, yeah, we'll find money for you, don't worry. And then all of a sudden, oh, we don't know how much money we have, period. Okay, I'm just going to go to a team where I think my skills might be better. Because would he be good on a fast break team? No.
No.
But would he be good on the slow down Pelicans offense? Yes.
Okay, Randolph and Allen are stalwarts of the grit and grind when you think about it, all the way back to when Lionel Hollins was coaching them when they really started to get good. Who are they going to miss? First of all, who are they going to miss most? And what was their identity in Memphis? Like, what do you remember about them, too?
Well, you're just going to remember the fact that the final score would be 82-79.
Mm-hmm.
That would be it. Just like, oh,
but
good.
They would be the 82 a lot. They would be the winning team.
They would be a lot of the winning team, but it's just like, oh, it's a tough game to have to sit through.
Mm-hmm. And who do you think they're going to miss the most?
They'll miss Zach Randolph, who became, you know, he was no longer a malcontent. He was happy, he was productive, and he was good.
Mm-hmm.
It was just time to move on, and, you know, they replaced him with it was essentially a trade. It's funny, well, Carter and Randolph signed with the Kings, but McLemore and Tyreek Evans signed with Memphis.
Yeah, but they're not power forwards or centers. So, like, can you? I guess that's sort of the root of where Marc Gasol is having his issues. Where, well, you made these moves, you signed Ben McLemore, you signed Tyreek Evans, you bring back Wayne Selden, who gave us some decent playing, some decent minutes when Tony Allen went down in the playoffs, but he's not like a game changer. And then you bring in Mario Chalmers off the street. The only big man you helped me out with is Ivan Rabb. Ivan Rabb ain't even ready to play.
He's not even signed, strangely enough.
Yeah, and so, like, I can't understand his misgivings, is what I'm trying to say.
It's very strange that a high second-round pick like him. But they also have Jarrell Martin.
They got Kevin Wright's contract, which
Brandon
is
Wright. They have Denyatta Davis. They have big men there. They just have failed to develop any of them. And Tyreek Evans, I want to say I like him because he'll be a nice Chandler Parsons insurance when he goes down 2 games into the season.
I've seen enough of Tyreek Evans, and I can tell you how this is going to end. He's going to average about maybe 7 points, 4 rebounds, and maybe like 3 assists.
See, I was going to say 10-6. I'm like, 10-6 is serviceable.
Yeah, that's going to be his range. Unless, I mean, listen, Dave Fizdale's a good coach. You know, they kind of modernized the game. I think you brought this up when we talked about him back and forth, is that Dave Fizdale did a good job of modernizing the Grizzlies.
Yes, he did, and this is a part of the unfortunate pain of having to scrape the barnacles off the boat. And then, you know, with your other signing is Ben McLemore, who I want to say I like it because Sacramento was a dumpster fire. And
well, it's just, either him or James Ennis at the small forward spot. So what are you
going to do? He should start easily. And you could say, well, he's a lottery pick and he has talent and he just wasn't able to show it. It was a bad situation in Sacramento. But on the other side, the logical part of me says I've been burnt by him for 3 years now saying he's going to be good. So.
And then a big part of this is Chandler Parsons, who signed that huge contract in the fabled summer 2016 spending honeymoon. But he only averaged 6 points and 2.5 rebounds, and he only played 34 games and went out with a knee. He also got a sick burn on Twitter by – I think it was C.J. McCollum, right? C.J. McCollum is like a social media warrior. That dude's got like mad Twitter game.
Too much time on his hands.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think it's fair to bet against – Parsons being a productive player at this point after it's fair to say 2 straight seasons of just non-production?
Well, those are just injuries. If he doesn't come back this year, then it's officially done. This is also his, no pun intended, make or break year.
Mm-hmm.
if he's just a shell and can't play and can't get a court.
Well, if he can play well at the three, like if he can stay upright and play well at the three, that can move Ennis and McLemore into the bench unit, and that actually could be effective.
Yeah, well, if he could do anything, that would be effective, as just opposed to him being the death of the franchise.
Their offense was obviously always bad. 28th in points per game, 30th last in field goal percentage, 21st in assists, even though Conley had one of his best – probably his best year statistically now that he's kind of the man. They've kind of taken the reins to him. Still a slow pace, still not a great rebounding team, but their defensive efficiency is good. I think the stat we kept talking about last year was that they were very clutch in the final 5 minutes of games when it was a close game. It just seems like the Grizzlies seem to know how to latch onto a game when it's close. Like they just have that natural instinct to be able to play well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's one of those. It's hard to bet against them because of the fact they've overachieved for all these years. And everybody, yes. Every year, this was a time they're going down. This is a time they're going down. But I think this year, Vegas has them at, what, 37 and a half?
37 and a half wins.
Time to pick the under on it.
I'll go over, but slightly. I'll go to 39. I think this will be a losing season for the Grizzlies. I don't know if some of those seasons they had where they made the playoffs was in turn an actual losing season. There probably were a couple that were really, really close. But I think this one will be a losing season for the Grizzlies. I love Mike Conley. I think he's a very good player. And I think Marc Gasol still got some punch left in him. Like I don't think Gasol's necessarily in decline even though he's in his 30s. Like there were some moments there with the Grizzlies last year where Gasol was like the man. Remember in the early part of the season where he was like popping threes?
The discussion is sort of skewed because he's 30. He's officially over. No, well, yeah, you're 30. It's a lot different if you're a high school kid who's been playing. Well, now you're 12 years in the league, but if you're Gasol who came in like, what, 21, 22, I think?
Yeah, well, maybe later. He maybe even 23. He came in around 2008, so if you're doing the math here, carry the five, it's like, yeah, it was sort of, he would be like, yeah, he 23 came in later, when he came in. Yeah.
And it's a lot different, you know, playing, let's say he played college for 3 years or you're playing in the Spanish league for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different than going straight to the NBA out of high school. The mileage numbers are different. So he's 31. He's over the hill. Yeah, let's 33, you can say it. 32 is sort of the magic number. So he has 2 good years left on him.
And the Allen departure, I don't know if they're just going to give that extra wiggle room to Jed Michael Green so they can finish off that deal, or it gives them a little bit of money to play with so that they can try to add a piece at the trade deadline or in the waiver deadline. But I will say this. I will confidently say they will not make the West playoffs. I think the bottom of the West is too competitive.
Yes, the West is.
They're naturally competitive. We just mentioned that, but this one might be this. You know, this is a stream that I don't think they're going to be able to swim out of. I hate to say. Let's talk about the Miami Heat. Now we talk about overachievers right here. This is your ultimate overachievers, Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley's group right here.
This in the same way Detroit, where everything came up tails, everything for Miami came up heads.
They came up heads after it all came up tails to start the season. They were like 10-31, and they finished 31-10. Is that right?
I think the birds disagree with you. just starting off slow and making adjustments, and yeah, they start off slow, then all of a sudden Winslow gets injured, and all of a sudden, wow, the team is playing better. Oh, well, that's one thing, but it's... Waiters Island being okay, I'm content. All the G League call-ups being overachievers. It's just Spoelstra somehow with his wizardry.
Yeah, he's just a great – he's kind of in that same – it's so funny because when Rick Carlisle and Eric Spoelstra coached against each other in the 2011 finals, it was like the first time in forever that we had two coaches who had never coached in the finals up against one another. And – the thing was that the criticism at the time was, well, we don't really know how good they are. We don't know how good Spoelstra is because he's got all these stars. And, you know, Rick Carlisle's got Dirk Nowitzki. And, well, it turned out that those are actually probably the two – would you say the two best X's and O's coaches, or would you give that to Popovich and Kerr and somebody like that?
Well, Popovich and Kerr also have veteran players. If you're, you know, off the wake of – the LeBron, well, I need my overpriced veteran friends to come in here. Well, then the cupboard's pretty bare, and you're just left with, you know, you're left with a Udonis Haslam.
And it was tough. I mean, they like one of the signings that Pat Riley made trying to get LeBron back was Josh McRoberts. They had to deal with Josh McRoberts for 3 seasons. That's not easy. I'm not saying Josh McRoberts is a horrible player. It's just that he's Josh McRoberts.
You can say it. It's cool. And the problem with this year is I get the feeling that Pat Riley says, I don't want to be in the basement, so I'm content just being mediocre for 3 years.
It kind of feels like what happened with Portland. The only difference is Pat Riley is too smart to overspend.
No, now, Portland was just delusional.
My point is that they looked at the nucleus and said, okay, we just had an offseason where we lost Aldridge, we lost Wes Matthews, we lost this guy and this guy. I don't want to go through this again. We have a playoff team. We had a playoff team with this nucleus. Let's do what we can to keep it together. And they vastly overpaid to do so. Whereas with Miami, they felt like, we got a competitive crew here. Spoelstra likes these guys. You know, Chris Bosh's contract is out of the way. Let's go ahead and use that extra money to spend it on this central cast and just kind of stick with it for a few years.
And the problem with that is you're doing it with James Johnson and Tyler Johnson and Rodney Magruder and Kelly Olynyk, who was their big signing, and Revis Island, Waiters Island. And it's just like, well, none of these players are going to put you even up into a 4 seed.
Well, we've been talking about the Eastern Conference. Like, in the East, it might happen.
No, it's even in the East, this team is built like a 6 seed tops.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. It's just like, you're content just saying, let's be mediocre.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is that one of the reasons why Riley was a little careful with the money that they spent, even though they did have that extra one from the medical retirement that they got from Chris Bosh and the arbitration, so that if Bosh does return to play, it's not going to penalize and take away that cap space from Miami, kind of like it did with who was it, Darius Miles? With Portland, where they immediately lost that money because he came back. Whereas they made an arbitrary decision where if Bosh does come back, that the Heat can still keep their money, which is fine. The one problem is that Tyler Johnson has an arenas deal. An arenas deal, as we talked about a few times, is when they call it the arenas provision, where you can only pay so much on the first 2 years of a contract if they're like a second round pick or an undrafted free agent. So what it is the first 2 years, it's like at a set salary, but you can pay him whatever you want after those first 2 years. So Tyler Johnson is in the second year of that contract, which means he's getting paid only $6 million. But it balloons to $18 million after that. So that's one where you got to keep a little bit of money in the back window so that you can pay that when it blows up.
Yep, and it's just going to be one painful year of that. And then next year you're going to have no money because of that extra $14 million that's going to be added to the books. But it's just there's no – I don't want to say there's no home run signings. There's no – it's just – like, let's just make the playoffs.
They got Kelly Olynyk because there was no room on the market for Olynyk because after Boston let him go. So
there was no market for him, but you gave $50 million to him. You gave $50 million to James Johnson, which was pretty much
that one. The $60 million contract for James Johnson at 50, I think it's $15 million a year, 4 years, $60 million at 30. That one I questioned. I didn't like that one as much.
Yeah, Waiters gets another $40 million.
You re-signed Josh Richardson so that you didn't.
Josh Richardson gets $40 million. It's just like you built this whole team on just $40 million players, and it's just like, well, yeah, you can have yourself $10 million guys, but you're not going to hit a home run. And you know, Bam Adebayo. Okay, that's cool. You could say.
Yeah, added like at least 3 syllables there. It's Bam Adebayo.
Adebayo. Let's just add more and more
It's kind of like it's kind of like Spoelstra and Levine. We're just gonna keep that. That's too good. That's too good.
Who's he? He can't play next to Whiteside, and you need Whiteside
and
on the court.
Say, Whiteside definitely. Like we talked about how Andre Drummond didn't seem to improve. Whiteside did. Whiteside has gotten to the point where he's like a star center.
In the East, definitely. Yeah. Well, actually, a star center in a league where there are no more centers.
I keep doubting Goran Dragic, but Goran Dragic is just better than I always thought he was. Like, every year I'm like, okay, he's going to sink here, and he just plays better.
you know?
I don't know. He could be off or on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like,
he's
like,
not a rebounding guy. He gets steals, but he's not a great – he's not known as a great defensive player because he's always kind of caught in a standstill. But he's a really good three-point shooter. He's got that herky-jerky game when he dribbles. He's a tough matchup for any point guard.
He is, but the problem is he's 30 and will be slowing down in the next few years. And
did you like paying Dion Waiters?
That's very risky.
Dion Waiters has finally planted a flag.
And that's the problem, is now you're going to have to live with it. And good luck. Good luck doing that after, you know, 30 games last year of, because yeah. Anything before, he didn't really do much before that. It was just, he was the starting two by default.
He was kind of like that, the default shooting guard when they would play that bigger lineup for the Thunder when they were playing the Warriors, which wound up almost taking down the Warriors. But that's the only thing I really remember well out of Waiters.
So, you know, the Vegas has him at 43.5. I say go under on this, because as much as I want to say they're going to be good, it's just this team is just mediocre, and you can't see mediocrity rising. I can't say, oh my God, can you see how James Johnson had that next level in him? That's amazing.
It felt to me, and we didn't talk about too many departures, because they didn't have many. The only one was Willie Reed.
Roberts.
Yeah, and Josh McRoberts, I didn't even think about Josh McRoberts. He's like out of sight, out of mind. The only other additions we didn't mention was that they brought in A.J. Hammonds in a trade. They got Derek Walton Jr. off the street as an undrafted free agent, and they brought in Jordan Mickey. We'll see if the Sioux City Skyforce will be able to make any headway out of them the way they did with Okoro White and Rodney Magruder. The thing is, with Miami, didn't it feel like that was like the most they could give? It felt to me that way. I remember Spoelstra was like almost in tears when they missed the playoffs, because he knew this is the best my guys could do. And
he did all he could. It just wasn't enough.
If they do all they could again, it's probably going to be 42-43 wins. So I'll go slightly under. You know, it's like a lot of these. I mean, Vegas is smart. Like for the most part, I think they've got a lot of these right on the bullet. You know,
and that's the thing. And next up is the usual perennial basement dwellers, and all of a sudden now people are irrationally high on them.
The Philadelphia 76ers. Now, there's just so much here going on. Like, I mean, literally just player movement. Just a lot of is it fair to call it overhype or just straight hype?
It's overhype. This okay. team had, you know, Embiid played 31 games.
Mm-hmm.
Still
my rookie of the year.
You have Simmons and Fultz, who both claim they're going to be starting point guards. You have a point where there's no – you've already reached a minutes crunch where you can get all these minutes for all these guys. You got Saric. We like him. Okafor, well, he's a number three pick. Where is he going to get his minutes? You're not going to
– Yeah, we're just talking about the front court here. We're not including Fultz in this conversation because I have a little sidebar on Fultz. But we're just talking about the front court right now, right?
Okay, you have your young pick. You have Furkan Korkmaz. You liked. You have Timothée Luwawu.
Rashawn Holmes.
Where are they going to get minutes behind J.J. Redick? Who, you know, I don't want to say isn't the best of signings, but I don't know how he's going to fit into this team if he's just he's essentially a 1-year rental. Amir Johnson, you got for locker room presence and veteran leadership. Redick, I don't see where he fits.
Redick got a 1-year $20 million deal, or was it something other than that?
1-year $22 million, I think.
Yeah, it's basically, let's see how it works kind of thing. We got the money, we've got the extra cap room this year, let's just use it, because we can get it back the following year. Now, the thing is, I got to ask you this about Robert Covington. It seems like the stat heads are in love with Covington because of efficiency numbers and per minute numbers or like plus minus type of deals, and the fact that he can play some defense and he's 26 years old. I don't see it with Robert Covington. I feel like Robert Covington is kind of like in the vein of Tony Snell, where he's like the best, your worst player on a good starting five. But is that a guy that is indispensable if the team becomes good? Kind of like Tabo Cephalosha when he was in Oklahoma City.
Kind of yes, but kind of no, because A lot of it just comes down to the coaching, and there really has, even to now, been no game plan, no development. It's just, all right, young guys, we're just going to get, we need to be in the top picks again, so go do what you want to do. So yeah, his stat numbers are great, but what is there really anything around him, or what would happen when things start getting tightened up?
Yeah, and his three-point shooting has been kind of in and out. I mean, I kind of feel a little weird about this, like, this reserving the money for Robert Covington narrative. Like, oh, we can't just let him leave. Like, this feels like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope sometimes, where it's like, really? I mean, are you getting yourself carried away for a guy that if a good deal comes along, you're just going to dump him like a sack of potatoes? You know, that's what I don't understand.
That was the old process way, but, you know, well, if you're going to have to max out Embiid, and if you think Fultz and Simmons, you have to max those out.
Well, Embiid's situation's weird because it's restricted free, because he literally missed two full seasons due to the foot injuries. And he looks so good his rookie year when he was healthy and on the court. His restricted free agency comes up next year. So either you just sit and wait for the offer sheet, or you just try to sign him up by November 1st. I mean, what would you do?
You'd have to wait for the offer sheet just due to the health injuries. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, you know, an offer sheet, well, it won't be that 5 years, but still, okay, that might not be a bad thing.
Whatever Otto Porter got from Brooklyn, I think that's what Joel Embiid's going to get, pretty much.
Yeah, 4 years, $100 million, 15% trade kicker, and
something
all
like
that stuff. But it's just, you're, oh my God, this team looks so good. Yeah, but young teams don't know how to win. Young teams don't know how to close out games, period. What's going to happen when all of a sudden, okay, you're up 5 with 6 minutes to go? You're going to wither that away like all young teams do who don't know how to, you know, play defense at the end.
Now, they won 28 games, which is actually a vast improvement over what they were the previous. Like, the previous year, what did they have, like 13 wins? Some yeah, kind of, like, horrible number. So it was actually a vast improvement, even though they were still pretty bad. The over-under from Las Vegas, we'll get to the roster in a second, but the over-under is 42.5 wins. That is just like...
That is just highly irrational.
Oh my God, that's a 14-game-and-a-half game improvement. I can't... That's almost impossible.
And, yeah, and then, again, if one person gets injured, what's going to happen? You just have, again, a bunch of... This is like the Timberwolves. You have a bunch of young players with talent, but they don't know how to play with each other. You know, you're relying on too many intangibles and too many potentialities.
Markelle Fultz, was he worth giving up a future first round pick or lottery pick?
If he is your point guard,
because they gave up an extra first round pick in the future of the Celtics in order to move up to number one.
If he is the guy everybody claimed him to be, and he's going to be the next great NBA player, and he'll be the next Magic Johnson, he'll be the next, you know, superstar, then yes, you have to do it if that's what you believe.
And they desperately needed a point guard, so I was actually on board with it when the deal was made, that this was definitely worth it. You know, and now Simmons, you know, I saw him at LSU, very talented player. I mean, really talented. Defensively, I don't even know if he's good. Like, but, and we haven't seen him even in preseason. All we saw him was in summer league back in 2016. But I feel like Simmons can definitely fit the mold as an NBA, like, point forward type. You know, I think that he can work. Now, can he work?
And that's the thing is,
yes,
you have both Simmons and Fultz, who came off losing teams, are completely disinterested. So we don't even know what they can and can't do.
Can Brett Brown be the kind of coach that they want? I've been asking that question for years. I like, well, Brett Brown, he just needs a chance. Okay, well, here's your chance. Like, I get the feeling like PJ Carlissimo did when he was the Oklahoma City coach, and they got Durant and Westbrook, and early into Westbrook's rookie year, they fired Carlissimo and replaced him with Scottie Brooks, because Clay Bennett made a pretty smart decision of, like, he noticed that just Carlissimo and the guys were just not on the youthful Thunder, they were just not on the same page, so they cut him loose. Like, I don't know if that's going to happen to Brett Brown, but it's not unreasonable.
And that's, you know, it seems to be the difference to me between Philly and Brooklyn, is the Brooklyn kids were horrible, but they were playing for Kenny Atkinson. I don't see these Philly kids really, even last year, like, oh, we're going to go give that 110% for that losing effort.
Mm-hmm.
You had your good two,
when they would
run.
Lose, they would lose awful. Like, they would get blown to bits, you know?
Yeah, and again, you process year one. Nerlens Noel traded for 2 second-round picks. process year three, Jahlil Okafor. We don't even know if he has a place on this roster.
And where are we at on league pass level with this team?
They will be. They will definitely be watchable.
Oh yeah, especially if they start picking up steam and they like, pray tell, they have like a winning record going into
the first three quarters will definitely be watchable. But then once again, comes closeout time, it's like, well, you know what's going to happen. They're gonna blow it, and you know can't hold it down. So definitely, we both agree we are on the hard under on this one.
How far under?
The hard under, not a game or two.
I'll go 37-45. I'll say a 9-game improvement, and that's vast, Adam. That's vast. Like, if you go from 28 wins to 37, that's great. That's great. You had a great year. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and that's what they expect. You know, crazy people, will this be playoffs? This will be it. This is where to make dent. No. This is the year to get everyone in, to get everyone situated. Then next year, okay, let's make the playoffs. Yeah, let's start
the
being
process.
Good.
It's I don't want to say it's over because the idea of the process is that it always continues. But you feel like the process is over.
It is over because you now need to pay. If this is your team, you need to now set aside money for this team.
But isn't winning part of the process, or do you think that winning is the part that starts after the process ends? Like the process.
Well, then the definition is what was your definition of the process to begin?
Exactly.
If your definition is to
we're
win,
doing this chicken or the egg thing. Yeah,
you should then flip Saric for somebody who can help you win. Now, then you should start flipping players.
Will they be able to move Okafor?
Yeah,
I mean they got to find something. The rumor was they couldn't even trade him for a second round pick in the summer.
That was the rumor, and again, also when the summer had hit and that rumor had come out, everybody had made all their signings, so there was no room left for anybody.
It was one of those things where, oh, well, we're trying to, like it happened to Shabazz Muhammad, where it's like, okay, we're going to renounce your rights. You can try to find your deal, but we're going to renounce your rights after all the cap money's dried up, or the cap room is dried up, so that you basically have to come begging back to us, and that's exactly what happened with Muhammad. All right, let's just go with our rankings here to start. Who do you have at number five? Like you're like because we're going this is the rankings that go from 16 through 20. So if this would be number 20 that for starters. Like who's your worst team in this episode we talked about?
76ers.
The 76ers. Just because of the fact that they just got out of or deep into the process or whatever way you want to.
Because they haven't proven anything yet. That's the same way of, you know, you're putting all these rookies who haven't played 1 minute in the NBA into the Hall of Fame and putting them on the All-Star teams already. It's like, no. Yeah, the team's going to be better. The team's going to be good, but they're not. They have to show something.
Let me ask you this. What if Simmons and Fultz are just really, really good? What happens then?
Then the team starts moving up rankings. That's how, but this is preseason rankings.
Well, remember, Blake Griffin was awesome out the gate after sitting out his original rookie year with the knee injury, but the Clippers were still horrible.
Of course they're going to be horrible. There's very few teams with number one picks who do good right off the bat because you still have many other pieces to go. As great as this is, you still don't have much of a bench on this team. It's just, you have all your first-round lottery picks, and then what's behind them? You got unnamed players, and just, well, we don't have much.
Yeah, and then I don't think there's a lot of fusion there, and I blame Brett Brown for that with their roster.
There's no fusion, and you just beat me to my point. It's the difference between them and, let's say, San Antonio. It's called a winning culture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're bringing in Amir Johnson because he comes from a winning culture.
Let's take Justin Anderson in the New Orleans Noel trade just because we think he's fascinating. Well, what can he do? Can he help you? You know?
Yeah, and, KJ McDaniels, he's doing good. Oh, well, let's flip him for a couple of second-round picks because he's getting hot. We need to dump somebody. That's the process, is we need more lottery tickets. So, no, they are number five easily.
Okay, number four, which would be represent 19 here.
I would say the Heat just because it's just mediocrity.
I've got the Charlotte Hornets. I'm just down on Charlotte this year. It's so funny because you're the one who's up on them, and I'm the one who's kind of down on them. Number three, which represents 18.
I would say Detroit.
I've got the Miami Heat because I just feel like even at max effort, I don't think they can top 42 wins. Like it's just going to be hard. And I'm not trying to say like the two teams ahead of them are going to either, but I feel a little more confident in them than the others. For number two, who you got?
I pick Charlotte because I think between them and Detroit, Charlotte would beat Detroit, but they're pretty evenly matched up.
And you like the addition of Dwight Howard because it gives them like a stalwart center who can rebound.
Yes.
Number two, I actually have the Grizzlies. And then at number one, I've got Detroit Pistons. I'm on the Avery Bradley Detroit Pistons train. Choo-choo.
You are very high on them, even though I think the Grizzlies just get smacked down more because of where they are in the West. But...
Well, the assumption would normally be, well, Memphis should be at the top of this list because of the fact that they're the ones that are always making the playoffs. Yeah, so they would be like the best. It's like when you get like sent down in the minors. You're still the best of the lower tier, but you're not good enough to be in the higher tier anymore. Is that fair to say for the Grizzlies? Because not to spoil too much, because we're not going to talk about the teams yet, but we have four teams in the next tier. We have six teams in the next tier. You know,
four, close enough.
And I feel like Grizzlies, if we added them to it, that would have been seven. I mean, that's a bit much. I don't feel that confident about 17.
You have to draw the line somewhere.
Exactly.
And it's just this, they fell down too far to be included. And
And when we talked about those six teams, we felt like I don't feel that confident in dropping them down because those six teams, there is potential there that they could be very good. You know, there was one I was kind of not too high on, but the others, yes.
It's like the NCAA tournament every year. There's a big difference between a 10 seed, let's say, Virginia Tech, who had a couple bad swings, but it's the ACC, so it doesn't matter. You finish eighth, you're still good, as opposed to, they won the Mountain West Conference, so they're also a 10 seed. There's a big difference between...
Yeah, they're not created equal. Yeah,
exactly so.
But by the nature of the format, we have to find a way to nudge them in. And it's hard. It's hard sometimes. But so it does feel like the Grizzlies don't fit in as much as with the Pistons and the Heat and the Hornets and Sixers. But if you look at it as just keep swimming, the whole mantra, it kind of does because it feels like these teams are just kind of fight. They're constantly fighting to get their piece of the pie.
So, okay.
You're just going to end it with that, huh? Do you feel like these teams are talented?
Oh, they're all talented, and like we said, some are on the upside, some are on the downside, but they have talent, which we couldn't have said that about the other teams before this.
Okay, but we're going to be going on with our next tier, and I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, guys.